Nashtapayesha Padeshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Verses 18, and we'll try to get till 22 today, and we'll see what happens. So I'll read, and we'll just have the regular chanting as usual in Bhagavatam class. Kuntiyavacha Namashe Purusham Tadyam Isharam Prakite Param Alakshyam Sarabhutanam Antarbahiravastitam. Chant. Asham Sarabhutanam. Antarbahiravastitam. I won't read the synonyms because there's lots of verses that we have to do. I'll just read the translation by Srila Prabhupada. Srimati Kunti said, O Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. Mukam karati vachalam pangam langhayate girim yakipam tamaham vande shikurum dinataganam om agyana timrandasya gyananjana shalakaya Chakshu Meditam Yenata Smai Shri Gurave Namaha. So Lord Brahma, he meditated for thousands and thousands of years before he could get this realization that Kunti Devi says, Namashe Purusham Twadyam. So Lord Brahma, he realized the same thing. He understood Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So how is this the same? Kunti Devi, she is saying Purusham Twadyam. Lord Brahma is saying Govindam Adi Purusham. Of course, she didn't say it's Govinda yet, but we'll hear about that later. She'll explain who is this Adi Purusham. Right now, she just wants to make sure that we understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then she says, Namashe. And Lord Brahma, he says, Tamaham Bhajami, that I worship Lord Krishna, Lord Govinda. But actually, Kunti is in a much more fortunate position than Lord Brahma, because actually she's seeing Krishna right in front of her. She's relating with Krishna as her nephew. Plus she has this understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then the next thing she says is Ishvara Prakrite Param. What does Ishvara mean? Ishvara, controller, yes. When we think of the controller, then we don't think so much of Krishna. We think more of Vishnu, that he's the controller beyond the material nature, beyond the modes. So actually, she's also referring to Krishna as in his part as Vishnu. Ishvara Prakrite Param. In Bhagavad Gita, it says, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam. Hridesha Arjuna Tishtati. That I am the Ishvara, I am in everyone's heart. And I am controlling the wanderings of all living entities. So here she is also praising Krishna as the Ishvara. And then she says, Antar Bahir Avastitam. So in the purport, near the end, if you want to follow, Srila Prabhupada says, Queen Kunti affirms that the Lord, although both within and without all living beings, is still invisible. Can you imagine that? He's without, he's within. We can't see him. He's everywhere. But unfortunately, we can't see him. And then Prabhupada says, the Lord is, so to speak, a puzzle for the common man. Queen Kunti experienced personally that Lord Krishna was present before her, yet he entered within the womb of Uttara to save her embryo from the attack of Ashwatthama's Brahmastra. Kunti herself was puzzled whether Shri Krishna is all pervasive or localized. So this is the problem that people today, they're confused. They think that because the Lord is all pervading, how can he be a person? If he's everywhere, how can he be a person? Of course, their mistake is that how can he be a person like you and me? Of course, he can't be a person like you and me. We're not all pervading. But actually, he is a person. And this is what Kunti is trying to say, that even though he's all pervading, even though he's Ishra, although he's all these things, still he is a person. He is Purusham Twadyam. He is the original person, not only a person, but the first person. So, the impersonalists, they don't understand that Krishna is a person. And so therefore, when they address the Absolute or the Supreme Lord, they do it in an impersonal way. They don't understand. They say to me, you are this, you are that. Just like there's one poet in Bengal, his name Rabindranath Tagore. So he said, I love you. But who is that you? He doesn't know. You ask him, who's the you? He says, to me. To me. To me in Bengali means what? You. I love you. But if you love someone, then it must be a person. But how the impersonalists, they are saying, I love you. But it doesn't enter their brain that you must mean he's a person. So in his Gitanjali, Srila Prabhupada quotes that Rabindranath Tagore has written, Tameva Pita, Tameva Mata. You are my mother, you are my father. But who is that Mata? Who is that Pita? That they cannot tell you. They don't understand this fact. So Prabhupada said, if you know who is the Supreme Person, you must address him by his name. So we know it's Krishna. And Kunti will point this fact out in a few verses later that we'll see very soon how she addresses Krishna by his names. Not just Krishna, but many, many names. So in the sixth canto, Srila Prabhupada explains that it's very important that the devotees always offer personal prayers to Krishna. And Prabhupada says, if you continue to offer such personal prayers, you can become eligible to become a pure devotee and go back to Godhead. So first, Kunti is going to establish who is this person standing in front of her. It's Krishna. We know it's Krishna. But who is Krishna? He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the first thing we have to know. So first she's establishing the tattva. Because people might think, oh, anyway, she's his aunt. She'll over-exaggerate about him. Just like Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, he said, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, you are this, you are that. So some people might say, oh, you know, he's exaggerating. He's his friend after all. But then Krishna said, no. Asita, Devala, Vyas, all these people, they have also said, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's Param Brahma. So Kunti is also saying, she's following in the sibic succession. And first she says Ishvara. She's calling Krishna Bhagavan also here in this prayer. Purusham Twaryam, this means Bhagavan. And then Antarbha here means inside, outside. Inside, he's who? Who is Krishna inside? Paramatma, yes. And outside, he's all-pervading. I mean, for Kunti outside, he was Bhagavan. But for us, we're not so fortunate as Kunti. For us, Krishna is Brahman. So at the end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, this is the last two sentences, he reserves the right of not being exposed to persons who are not surrendered souls. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes who are these unsurrendered souls. It's four kinds of them. Does anybody remember from Bhagavad Gita? Who are the four souls who don't surrender to Krishna? Yes. Mudhas. Yeah. Maya Yaprita Gyana, yes. And anybody else? Naradama, yes. Asura, yes, we got it. These are the four kinds. So Krishna reserves the right of not being exposed to persons who are not surrendered souls. What is the verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says this, actually? He says, I cover myself from these people. Anybody know that verse from Bhagavad Gita? Naham Prakasha? Yes. I'm never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. So, How is Krishna covering himself? That's what we're going to find out in the next verse. Prabhupada says in the last sentence of the purport, this checking curtain is called the Maya energy of the Supreme Lord, and it controls the limited vision of the rebellious soul. It is explained as follows. Okay, we'll go to the next verse. This is verse 19. Does anybody have any question on this first verse before we go on? Yes. Oh, sixth canto, quote, okay. Quoted from sixth canto, 6:14:5. Yes, okay. So we'll go on to verse 19. This time I'll just have two volunteers can chant also after I chant, because if everybody chants, we'll never finish. So I'll just chant first. Maya javanika chanam. Agyad haksajama vyayam nalakshase mudharisha nato natyataro yata. Okay, one person can chant. Maya javani kachanam agyad haksajama vyayam nalakshase mudharisha ato natya taro yata. One more person. Maya javaika chanam agyaraks chamafyayam alakshase mahadisha ato natya taro yata. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, the eternally irreproachable factor, covered by the curtain of deluding energy, you are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. So here in the purport, towards the end, Srila Prabhupada says, let's see, I don't know if I can find it here. Towards the end, it's a big purport here. Anyway, I'll just read it to you. It's a section here. Those who depend more on their imperfect senses cannot realize him as a Supreme Lord. Such persons are like the modern scientist. They want to know everything by their experimental knowledge. But it is not possible to know the Supreme Person by imperfect experimental knowledge. He is described herein as a hoksaja, or beyond the range of experimental knowledge. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati tells a story about a man. He was a very rich landlord, and he had many servants, and they were always flattering him. Oh, you are so great. You are so rich. You are so wonderful. Your wish is our command. So one time the landlord told him, okay, now it's nighttime. I want to see the sun. Show me the sun. They said, yes, if you desire, it must be possible. We must show you the sun. So one of the servants said, I will get 1,000,000 candles and I will show you the sun. So he lit 1,000,000 candles. But lo and behold, it was a failure. So another person said, no, no, this is the old days. We must have electricity. I will bring lots of electricity and I will show you the sun. So he brought so much electricity. He lit up the whole sky, but still could not see the sun. So then one intelligent friend said, actually, you know, you're never going to see the sun like this. You have to wait till the sun rises. So, the moral of the story is that everybody wants to see God. And they want to see it with their tiny brain, their tiny senses. But it's not possible. It's just like holding a match at nighttime to see the sun. You'll never do it. It's not possible. So here, this is the reason why you cannot see Krishna. It says here in the Sanskrit, Maya Javani Kachanam. There's a curtain. There's a curtain in front of our eyes. And so we cannot see. Bhagavad Gita, here it says Maya Javani Kachanam. And in Bhagavad Gita, there's another place where Krishna says almost the same thing, and it starts with Maya also. Maya Ya Parita Jnana. That their knowledge is stolen. It's also stolen. Here it's Maya Javani Kachanam. So they're very proud of their advancement of knowledge. But Krishna says, no, you cannot see me, I'm covering myself. Krishna's mystic power is much more compared to theirs. And also, Krishna is adhoksaja. Adhoksaja, what does adhoksaja mean? Beyond the perception of the senses. Adhoksaja. So, in the darkness of night, we cannot see the sun. But when the sun rises, then we can see everything. We can see ourselves also. So, akshaja means direct perception, trying to see with your senses. And adha means to make it go defeated, make it go down. Adha means down. So if you try to see Krishna with your eyes, with your imperfect senses, then you'll be defeated. This is what adhoksaja means. So Krishna is adhoksaja. You cannot perceive him by your senses. So in the previous verse, Kunti said Krishna is alaksham, invisible. And in this verse, she's telling us who are those people who cannot see Krishna. And in the Sanskrit, the word is mudha drisha. Mudha drisha means one who has the vision of a mudha, one who has the vision of a fool. They cannot see. For them, Krishna is invisible. Even if Krishna is right in front of you, staring you in your face, you won't see him. And we'll talk about that tomorrow, how so many people saw Krishna, but they didn't understand who he was. He was standing right in front of them. So, this was one of Prabhupada's favorite words, mudha. So, oftentimes he would go on a walk in Bombay, in Juhu Beach, with his friend Dr. Patel. And he would call Dr. Patel mudha all the time, because Dr. Patel was a very staunch impersonalist, and he was always arguing with Srila Prabhupada. So then, another time, Prabhupada would say, he was quoting this verse, Manushanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Anybody knows that verse, what it means? Manushanam? You know? Right, out of many thousands of men, one may endeavor for perfection. So Prabhupada, he translated that verse in a different way. He said, out of many thousands of mudhas, or fools, one may try for perfection. Because he said, anyone who has taken his birth in this world is a mudha, is a fool. We're fools to come here in the first place. So therefore, out of many thousands of fools, one may desire perfection. And often when he would call people mudhas, and they would complain, why are you calling me fool? Prabhupada said, I'm not calling you fool. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, anyone who does not surrender to him, he is a mudha. So here we have mudha drisha. And there's an example, a nice analogy that Kunti gives. Who is a mudha? What is a mudha like? So mudha is like this. Prabhupada explains in a lecture, it's just like a child. A child is sitting in the audience of a drama. A drama is going on. And on the stage is the father of the child. But the child doesn't recognize his father because he's all disguised, he looks different, he's acting in a different way. And the mother's sitting in the audience and she's seeing the father and she understands, oh yeah, this is the father of the child. And she's telling the child, don't you see? That's your father there. He's on the stage. So Krishna is like that. He's like an actor. But even if we see him, we don't understand. Because he's playing a different part. We can't see him. Sometimes he appears as a fish. Sometimes he appears as a tortoise. Sometimes he appears as Varaha. Sometimes as Vamana. So how can we figure out that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? It's very difficult. So he has so many disguises. And even when he comes in a human form, still we don't understand. This is Krishna. So, Krishna, therefore he teaches us Bhagavad Gita. He's saying, you want to see me? Okay, you can see me. You see me like this. In the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells so many ways that you can perceive him. Somebody can tell me one way. What's one way you can see Krishna? Yes. I am the taste of water. Yes. What else? Ability in man, yes. Light of the sun and the moon. Fragrance of the earth. Sound and ether, yes. A body is a water, I am the ocean. Good, that's 10th chapter, I believe. Yes, but these are the ways we can see Krishna, even in this world. Even though we don't have the eyes to see him, he's trying to help us. But the fool, he will say, no. How I can see? How you can see in water? How can you see God in water? I want to see with my eyes. Show me with my eyes. My eyes are the most important. This is the sense for perceiving everything, the eyes. So what did Prabhupada used to say to these people? Can you show me God? You can see in your hand. What else did Prabhupada say? Yes. You have to wait till God reveals himself to you. Yes, very good. What else? Yes, you don't have the eyes to see God. What kind of eyes? Your eyes are diseased. You take the cure. You've got cataracts on your eyes. How do you expect to see God? How can you expect to see the truth? You're diseased. So this is the problem. That Krishna is very, very difficult to understand. On the one side, there's the curtain covering our eyes. The other side, he's the Dhoksaja, he's beyond. He's beyond the range of our senses. And then another way of looking at it, we're all mudas. So even if he did come in front of our senses, we wouldn't understand that this is God, this is Krishna. So this verse is telling us all the problems that we face in perceiving Krishna. And why we cannot see him. So unless we're very serious to understand Krishna, then it would be very difficult to understand. So we have to take this process. It's possible some people do see Krishna. Lord Brahma described Premanjana Charita Bhakti Viloshanena, that these people, they can see. Who are these people? Who are these ones who have eyes saturated with love? These are the devotees. So to the devotees, Krishna reveals himself. So we can see an example where Krishna can be standing right in front of a devotee and there will be a non-devotee next to him and the devotee will see, the non-devotee won't see. Can somebody give me an example? Yeah. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, yes. He couldn't understand. And Gopinathacharya, was it? Was right next to him. Yes, this is, you don't understand. This is the Supreme Lord. And they had the same eyes. Of course, they had different eyes. He had love. He had Premanjana eyes. Yes. Yes, Prahlad. Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad was seeing, even before Nrisimha came, he was seeing. He was seeing, there he is. And so Hiranyakashipu said, is he in that pillar? Prahlad said, yes. And then he struck the pillar and then he could also see. But he didn't believe. he was coming. He said, ooh, what is this kind of creature now? But it never entered his head that this could be God. Yes? Who? Oh, Bibhishana and Ravana. Yes. They both saw Ram. But Bibhishana was seeing him as God. And Ravana was seeing as who? How is Ravana seeing Ram, actually? What? Competitor, yes. He's got Sita. Actually, all the women are for me. They're not. Why should he have the women? This is the most beautiful woman. It means must be for me, Ravana thought. I should have Lakshmi. So everybody now in the world, they're mad after Lakshmi. Everybody wants Lakshmi. Why should God have Lakshmi? Give your money to God. Why God? Why God should have Lakshmi? He has so much he doesn't need. Better I have Lakshmi. So anyway, these things are going on. So therefore, we have to follow in the footsteps of the devotees. Mahajano yena katha sapanta. Just like Prahlad. Another example, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he entered the Jagannath temple, he saw Jagannath, he fainted. Whereas other people, they think, well, who is this crazy guy? He's fainting in front of these wooden statues. But he was seeing, this is Krishna. He saw Krishna manifest before him. And so he fainted. So one thing we can do, we poor conditioned souls, we'll hear about this a little later, that we cannot see Krishna standing here in front of us. Would be nice, but we can't. So therefore, we have to go to the temple. We can go to the temple and the curtains are closed when the curtains of Maya, when the curtains open, and then Krishna reveals himself to us in the morning in the temple. So Krishna opens the curtains of Yoga Maya every day, if we're there, and we can go and see him standing before us. So now we don't see Krishna. We must also be mudas, because we're not seeing Krishna all the time. Must be some problem there. So my question is to you, that what are the misconceptions that are covering us, that are part of this curtain. Part of this curtain is misconceptions in our heart that prevent us from seeing Krishna. What misconceptions, what wrong ideas do we have? Yeah. Enjoyer and controller, okay? I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. Yes?
That we have a separate existence.
Right. That we're separate from Krishna. We can exist without Krishna. This is a big problem. And if we think like this, then the curtain comes. Okay, you're separate. At least you think you can think you're separate. We're not separate, actually, ever. But we can have this illusion. This is the illusion of Maya, that we're separate, that we're the controller, we're the enjoyer. Any other misconceptions that can stop us, prevent us from seeing Krishna?
Envious,
yeah. We want to have what Krishna has. Or if not Krishna, then somebody in this world, we want to have what they have. Yes.
Pride.
Yes, pride. I am the center. As soon as I wake up in the morning, it's what's going to happen to me today? I'm the star of the show today, and let's see what's happening in this never-ending movie of my life. Okay, yes?
False ego,
yes. And part of that, I think, is controller and enjoyer. All these things, actually. That's a big general category. That's very good, too, to make it a general category. Okay. Yes? What? Impersonal concept, okay? Impersonal, that we think... what do we think if we're impersonalists? That we just... Yeah, it's an energy out there, okay? And I'm just part of that energy, right? I mean, after I die, I'll just go back to the energy. And right now, I'm just an energy. And that's all there is to it. Just like a bubble in the ocean. That's how we are. So some philosophers do say that. Okay, so we heard about who are the people that Krishna covers himself from. Now we're going to hear about who Krishna reveals himself to. And that's the Paramahansas. And that's the next verse here. So read verse 20.
Tata paramahansanam
muninam amalatmanam
bhakti yoga vidhanartham
katam
pashyema histriya.
Translation. You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service unto the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators, who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly?
So Kunti, actually, she's not ordinary. Krishna has come at the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra. Krishna is leaving Hastinapura. He's trying to go to Dwarka. So first thing he did before he left, he's going to take the dust of Kunti's feet. He's asking permission. First he goes to all his superiors, his mothers. So Kunti was just like his mother. So he's going to get her blessings for his trip, just like we go and ask blessings when we're going to go on a long trip somewhere. So Krishna's doing that. She's like his mother. And this is the Vedic culture that before you go on a trip, then you go, you beg leave of everyone before you go. So Krishna was doing this with Kunti, because she was like his superior. And so Krishna, he was also touching the feet of Maharaj Yudhisthira, just like Yudhisthira was like his elder brother. So first, we just heard how Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead, but here he's acting in such a humble position to his devotees. So we heard a little bit about that in class today, how some of the devotees in Vrindavan, they don't see Krishna as the Supreme. They see and then they forget. But these devotees here, they actually didn't forget. They always knew Krishna is the Supreme, but still they accepted that Krishna wanted to act in this way with them. So they accepted that. Maharaj Yudhisthira was not returning his obeisances. So Queen Kunti, she's saying, Tata paramahansanam muninam amalatmanam, that you are coming here. Why are you coming here? You are coming here to give the highest knowledge of bhakti yoga to the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and the munis. Great yogis, sannyasis,
They try their whole life. They go to the forest to perform austerities. Why? Why do they perform? Why do these yogis? What is the goal of yoga? What is the purpose of taking so much trouble to go to the forest and perform austerities? What do these yogis want besides mystic? Who has mystic powers may or may not be. But there's something more than that, that they're actually aiming for, the real yogi. What are they aiming for when they go out there? Yeah. Paramatma. Yes, Paramatma. They want to get a glimpse. They want to meet the Lord in the heart. They want to get a glimpse at least of his lotus feet. They're trying for his lotus feet. So this is their aim. So they would never go to the Grihasthas. They wouldn't go near a city. They're just out in the Himalayas or in the jungle or in the forest doing their austerities. But at the time when Krishna was here, they were always coming to Kunti's house. Because they knew, if I go see Kunti, then I'll see Krishna there. They'll get a chance to see the lotus feet of Krishna. This thing that they're trying so hard for in their austerities, he's available easily. He's purchased by the devotees. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, Shukadev Goswami says to Maharaj Parikshit, what is there to say about the house of the Pandavas? Lord Krishna was your minister. He used to enter your house as if it were his own, and he didn't care about Duryodhana's house. So Prabhupada explained, that is 3:1:2. And Prabhupada's purport is even more wonderful about that verse. Prabhupada said, according to the Gaudiya, Achintya Beta Beta Tattva, everything is simultaneously one with and different from Krishna. Anything that satisfies the senses of Krishna is also Krishna. So, what this means is that the house of the Pandavas was so pleasing to Krishna that it was non-different. It was a dham. It was a holy dham where Krishna was residing there. He was living there with Arjuna and the Pandavas. So because it was such a source of bliss for Krishna, therefore, it was also a holy dham. And Prabhupada said the Lord identified their house with his own self. It was so wonderful. So this is Kunti, who is the mother of all the Pandavas. So she is so fortunate. But here she's putting herself in such a humble position. In the seventh canto, Narada Muni told King Yudhisthira, of course, Yudhisthira was hearing all about Prahlad Maharaj, how all his exalted qualities, how he was so dear to Nisringa. And then Yudhisthira was saying, oh, he's such a great devotee. Who am I? I'm nothing. Narada Muni said, no, that's not true. He said, my King Yudhisthira, in this world, you Pandavas are the only fortunate persons. Because Krishna has come here, and he's always with you in all circumstances. He's living with you. He's covering himself from the eyes of the others. So you're very, very fortunate. So here Kunti is saying, you are coming here for the sages. But actually, he didn't come here so much for the sages as for his pure devotees like Kunti. He came here for her. He came here for the Pandavas, to enjoy relationships with them. So although he did come to benefit the sages also, his main purpose was for his devotees. And we'll hear about that also later on. But Kunti, she was not thinking like that. She was thinking, all these sannyasis, these paramahansas, they're so much greater than I am. They're much better. They can understand the science. I cannot understand this philosophy very much. It's very difficult for me to understand. But they can understand, so Krishna is coming actually for them. But this was her humility, that she says like this, but actually, she is not an ordinary person. She's a devotee. Otherwise, they wouldn't quote her in Srimad Bhagavatam. People study Bhagavatam for their lifetime, and here she is. She's speaking in Bhagavatam. But she's saying, no, no, you're meant for the great munis. You're for those people who can discriminate between matter and spirit. You're for these people. But she actually, Krishna came for her. So, let's see what Srila Prabhupada says at the end of the purport. He makes the point that, I have to get my glasses. Oh yeah. The Lord is so kind, he does not show special favor only to one who is a great philosopher. He knows the sincerity of purpose. For this reason, only women generally assemble in great number in any sort of religious function. Every country and every sect of religion appears the women are more interested than the men. The simplicity of acceptance of the Lord's authority is more effective than showy, insincere religious fervor. Bhagavad Gita Krishna says the same thing in the third chapter. He says that somebody may be withdrawing his senses from the sense objects, but his mind meditates on the sense objects. So Prabhupada, in the purport, he said, sincere sweeper in the street is better than the charlatan meditator. So this is very, very important. That Prabhupada said this humility is so good in devotional service. Actually, it's the key. This humility is the key for us to get to nishtha and the higher levels of progression in devotional service. Chanadapi sunichena. If we have that one quality, we can go higher. And if we don't have it, then we can't. And I think today's Bhagavad Gita class, I think humility is the first step in knowledge. You can't get knowledge without humility. You can't get progress in devotional service without humility. So here is somebody who's so advanced, but she's so humble. So this is very wonderful. Humility, even though you have great knowledge, this is humility. This is real humility. So, but humility, Prabhupada said, let's see in his lecture, oh yeah, actually especially in these days, it's very important because there's so many disturbances. And if we're not humble, then we won't tolerate the disturbances. And if we don't tolerate the disturbances, then what happens? We get entangled in the modes. All these disturbances are always coming. They can't stop. We're living in the place of disturbance, the material world. And we're having the body, which is the place of disturbance too. The older you get, you see that. That it's more miserable than it is pleasurable. It much outweighs the pleasure. So Prabhupada explains that in this world you can't expect a very peaceful situation. Just like if you're on a ship. Prabhupada was on a ship crossing the Atlantic Ocean. And there was, of course, according to the captain, it was a peaceful ride, but Prabhupada was feeling disturbance. He had seasickness. So that's how it is in this world, that we can't expect a very peaceful journey, so we have to tolerate, therefore. Krishna also advises Arjuna, first thing in Bhagavad Gita, what does he say to Arjuna? Matra sparshas tukongteya shitoshnas. You know that verse? No. Okay. Just raising your hand. All right. So Maya will test us. If we try to get out of this material world, if we try to serve Krishna, then it's like we're trying to escape the prison. So what happens if you try to escape prison? They put the sirens on. Everyone's alert. The searchlights are out. Very difficult to get out. So Maya is very alert, Prabhupada said. She doesn't want us to disturb Krishna. She wants to make sure that we're actually serious to serve Krishna and not to disturb Krishna. So therefore she tests us. She gives us some problems. So therefore we have to tolerate. And this principle is being shown to us by Kunti, humility. So, actually I'll tell you one story about Prabhupada, how he was humble. This is a very small story, but it's a great example of Srila Prabhupada's humility. When the devotees first came to India, then Prabhupada went to Hyderabad along with Madhavisa Swami. And Madhavisa had his danda, and he was with Prabhupada. So Prabhupada arrived at the city, and some people came out to meet the devotees and Srila Prabhupada. So then their first question was, they had never seen Prabhupada or the devotees. They said, there is Prabhupada and his disciples. So they said, who's in charge here? They didn't even know who was the leader. So what did Prabhupada say? He said, as you like. As you like, whoever you like to be in charge. And then Madhavisa said, no, he's in charge. And so the Indian man, he said, oh, but I thought you were because you have the big stick. So then Maharaj said, no, he gave me the stick. So therefore, this is Prabhupada. There's another purport, which I can't remember exactly, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Dhruva Maharaj, that Dhruva took his mother back to Godhead. So then Prabhupada said, I'm just praying that one of my disciples becomes a pure devotee, so they'll take me back to Godhead. So this is Prabhupada. This is his humility. And he's the most advanced devotee. So if he has humility, then we should also. We should somehow or other desire to have this quality. Okay, so My next question, I'm going to have you do something so you don't fall asleep. Take a piece of scrap paper, not a good paper, just a little corner of your paper, if you have any paper, just a corner somewhere of your notebook. This is just for yourself. Of course, we'll share it later on, maybe. But I'm going to give you a sentence, and I want you to write one word. Only one word. So this is just a little thinking exercise, but it'll be interesting what the results are. So the sentence is this. Humility is blank. I want you to write, complete the sentence, humility is. What is humility, in other words? I want one word. Only one word. What's the word that comes to your mind when you think of humility? Just one word. Not difficult. You don't have to write a whole essay. One word. Yes? You have two words? It's more difficult. Oh, and she's a writer. Here's a writer, and she says it's more difficult to write one word than a whole essay. Maybe for you. Okay. Did everybody finish? No, you didn't finish? Okay. Oh, okay, you got one word. There's no right or wrong answers to this exercise. It's just we want to see what is humility. So, I need someone to write again on the board today. Would you like to? Oh, good, you can write. That way you don't have to tell us your word if you don't want. Okay, so let's hear some of the words. Can somebody tell me their word? Honesty, very good. Honesty. Okay, anybody else have a word? Yeah. Pridelessness. Yeah, that's a good word. No pride. Okay. That's also, I believe, in Bhagavad Gita, your class today. That's very good. You're quoting Shastra. What do you have?
Surrender.
Surrender. Okay, yes. Inner strength. Okay, two words, all right, no problem. Almost one. Yes.
Tolerance.
Okay. Yes? Yeah, that's okay. No, it doesn't have to be the meaning. Grass. Okay, good. From Lord Chaitanya. Like grass. Yes, that's all right. What? Simplicity. Good. Okay. Simplicity. Yes? Your word? You want to tell us? She's too humble. Okay, you don't have to. Yes? Sweetness.
Okay.
Would you like to tell us? Imperative.
Oh, okay.
You understand? Does everybody understand what she's saying here? Imperative means necessary for those who are English second language. Necessary, imperative. Anybody else? Yes? Three words. Okay.
Success in spiritual life.
That's four. Okay? Success in spiritual life. Humility. You have?
Humble.
Humility is humble. Okay. That's true. Success? Perfection. You put perfection. Okay, good. Anybody else? You have one word? Faithful? Okay, faithful. Yes. Knowledge. Okay, humility is knowledge. These are the words. It's not exactly definition, it's what we think of when we think of humility. Yes. Oh, what?
Compassion.
Very nice. Compassion. Anybody else have, yes?
Reality.
Yes. That's close to honesty, so it's right up there. We have reason to be humble if we're honest about ourselves. Yes. Okay, tell us your word.
Deceptive.
Deceptive? Okay. It can be. Yes. How would you like to explain it? Okay, a truly humble person seldom appears to be humble. And so sometimes we put it on, is what you mean. Yes? Wonderful, yes. That's really good. Okay, very good. Deception. So the deception is to desire honor. So this reminds us of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, that humility means humbler than the blade of grass, more tolerant than the tree, not expecting any respect from others, giving all respect to others. Yes, you have something? No, you agree. Okay, good. Yes.
Challenging.
Challenging? How is that? Oh, I see. Okay. Challenging yourself. Humility means to challenge yourself. Challenging. Okay, you can write that down. That's very nice. So we have a very good cross-section here. Actually, you can sit down. Thank you. I have one article here from BTG. Last BTG I got, it's about humility, interestingly enough. And here is... Vasudeva, the father of Krishna, he's washing Narada Muni's feet. So it's a picture of humility. Father of Krishna, Vasudeva, what does he need to know about anything? But he's asking Narada Muni, he's saying, I'm so fallen, I'm a grihastha, you please tell me how I can get out of this bondage. So this is humility. He's got Krishna for his son. And he's wondering, he thinks he's in Maya. So this is really humility. And I'll read you a little bit. She has, I think she has two more words here that we didn't get. She has honesty. Honesty, and let's see what she says about that. I'll just read a... Whoops. Oh, here it is. You can get it? Thank you. Yeah, for honesty. Understanding that whatever power we have is given by Krishna and can be taken away also. So this is honesty. Whatever ability, like you said, somebody said ability in man. So whatever ability we have, we should be honest that this is given by Krishna. He can take it away also. Anytime. Actually, I just remember it. When I had an operation on my foot, then he took away my memory. I forgot who I was completely. I was conscious, but I didn't know who I was. I had no concept that I was even a person. I didn't know what I was or who I was or where I was or anything. So I had, I'm so proud of, knowing all these verses. But then Krishna in a second, it was gone. Even I didn't know my name or who I was or even Krishna. This was under anesthetic. yeah, he was worried a bit there for a minute. No, they gave me anesthetic. And that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to make you forget. Usually you go to sleep, but I didn't sleep. I just forgot who I was. And I forgot the pain and all the operation was going on. So then she has another word that we don't have here, and that is gratitude. Humility is gratitude. So she says, gratitude for whatever comes, whatever he gives me, is as great as I am unworthy. So that's a very nice thought. Humility is gratitude. Gratitude for what you have. Always appreciating, always being grateful. Usually we don't appreciate. You say, why Krishna's putting me in this situation? But how many times do we appreciate what Krishna is doing for us every single day, every moment of the day? How many prayers do we pray of appreciation of Krishna? Oh, thank you for giving me this, giving me that. Then the third, another word that we didn't have, she has, is joyful. Humility is joyful. Sweetness is close. Satisfied in all conditions, being Krishna's servant is so wonderful, I'm happy to take whatever will please him. Happy to be whatever will please him. Happy to do whatever will please him. So these are some more words on humility. Does anybody have any questions on this verse or any of the verses that came before? You have a question? No, I don't have a question. Okay. So we're going to go on to the next verse. And oh, you have a question. Another word for humility. Discretion. Yes. Discretion. Oh, yes. Okay. Discretion. means that he may be full of realization, but he won't go showing everybody that he has it. I'm a self-realized soul. Did you know that? That's what he doesn't say, things like that. He doesn't show off his realization. But he, when the time comes, when the proper time comes, when it's asked for, then he can manifest that. You have a question? No. Okay. So I think all the Bhakti Shastri students left except a few. Yes, you have a question.
I'm just thinking humility
also is self-manifesting. It's self-manifested. Right, self-evident. Okay. Something that it's natural. It's natural.
You can't fake it. It's either there or it's not.
Right.
If someone
has it, they usually recognize it. Okay. You can't fake it. Very good. Yes.
It's healthy.
Oh, right?
Usually people don't believe it's healthy.
Oh, yeah. They think, you know, you should speak up for your rights. Yes? What is the use of humility? It's weakness. Actually, they think it's weakness, especially in a man. It's a sign of weakness, humility. Healthy, yes. Now it's the new age and everyone is very concerned about their health, especially. So humility is healthy. Should tell everybody. It's very healthy, psychologically and physically also. Yes. Because if you're always fighting, you know, something happens and you're like this, you're just going to fight it, then it makes you sick. And if you're humble, if you accept, then it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier, yeah.
What if something's not correct?
Yes. Right. So her question is, that what if something is wrong, incorrect? Then should you be humble about that? What do you say? Deceptive, okay. Sometimes you have to act, and don't be humble. And we see this actually in Chaitanya Leela, when Madhai hurt Nityananda Prabhu. Nityananda was humble, but Lord Chaitanya was angry. Nityananda was showing the behavior, for myself, I don't care. You please deliver this Madhai. You please deliver him. And Lord Chaitanya, he was ready to kill Madhai. So Lord Chaitanya wasn't humble in that situation at all. But Nityananda was humble, and by his humility, he delivered. He delivered Jagaya Madhai, yes.
It takes humility to actually speak up.
Okay, it takes humility to speak up when there's injustice. Okay? How's that? So if you speak up, then you're going to get a negative reaction. So you have to be humble to expect and to accept the reaction. Yes. Simplicity is to be able to speak the truth, even to an enemy. What's correct? Okay. Yes, Nari? Okay. She's saying, if something is not right, but Krishna is allowing it, so it must be Krishna's plan. What do you say, Srimati?
I'm just thinking of that.
Okay. So how do we see it from Krishna's perspective? We have to look in the books. We have to consult the devotees, the guru. Hopefully they have Krishna's perspective. The sadhus, the gurus, and the shastras are supposed to agree. So then we must consult them if we want to understand what is the proper action that we can take. Yes. Super soul. Consult super soul. Okay. Anybody else on this? Yes. Jada Bharat. So we have to discriminate on the basis of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Well, she said, Prabhupada said, don't be like this. We have to open up and we have to be able to speak the truth, even to our enemy. Prabhupada gives the example, if the enemy comes to steal your money and you're a simple Brahmin, you tell him, oh, here, it's right here. Take. That might be the safest thing to do too, yeah. Challenging, yes, okay. You said challenging. What did you mean by that? Oh. It's a challenge, yes. It's challenging to be humble. Challenging to be humble. Okay? Challenging. Yes. Grass. Like the grass.
And I can
Humility is what? Prabhupada, yes. Right, right. Humility is Prabhupada. That's nice. I remember I gave the assignment to my class when I was teaching Bhakti Shastri. One of my classes, I told everyone, okay, I want you to go out today and find one honest man. One honest person. And you have to tell us why you chose this person. I mean, so it was over the weekend, so they had some time. So everybody came with their person, and one devotee brought a deity of Prabhupada and put him on the table. Here's the honest, one honest man I found. And so it's true. Inner strength. Who said inner strength? You did, yes. Okay. Okay. Means being strong enough to say the truth. Simplicity. Inner strength. So these are not all definitions of humility, but they are just things that come to our mind when we think of humility. So they're associated with humility. Not, some of them are definitions. Pridelessness is a definition of humility. Humble, as you said. These are definitions. But others are just what comes to our mind when we think of humility. Yes? Okay, anybody else have anything on humility? No. So we won't have time to start the next verse today, so I think we'll end early today because our Bhakti Shastri students have a test also. The women have a test. And most of them have left already to go study. That's why everybody was leaving early today. They have a test, one of their final tests. So tomorrow you please read from verses 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. 21 through 25, this is chapter 8. And if you don't have a book, then you can try and get one, because we don't have any more. Okay? All glories to Srila Prabhupada.